this episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast.
You spent 18 months getting three leads, none of which you went ahead with, and you spent 14 months, only 12 of which you took action in, and you've done seven completions, two more going through, so nine to come out of that activity, and you're disappointed. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sorry, we should knock this on the head, this podcast, mate. We've let you down. Do you want your money back?
Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Welcome, Mr. Edward Jackson, to our podcast, our EPP podcast. How are you today, sir?
Very good, Frank. How are you?
I'm good, mate. And thank you so much for giving up a chunk of your very valuable time from over there in Northern Ireland. Whereabouts in Northern Ireland are you dialing in from today?
I'm a Belfast based myself, Frank, right in the city.
Absolutely. A lovely city it is. I've been to the jail in Belfast. I think that's about it. It's quite famous, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the only place where you could say somebody took you to a jail for a visitor attraction.
They did. Ian Jackson, no relation to yourself, actually took me for lunch to a jail. Yeah, absolutely. That was a first. So, Edward, thank you for coming on, mate. The reason I've invited you on is because I heard on the grapevine a few weeks ago, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago now, you actually did three completions in the same week. Am I right in saying that? Did I hear right?
You did hear correct, Frank, yes.
That is unbelievable. I don't know anyone who's done three. I don't think I've ever done three in 1 week. That is very impressive. So what I'd like to do, when I heard that, I thought we've got to get this Northern Ireland prodigy property investor to come on the podcast. Are you sure you're not related to Ian Jackson? Because he's done like 360 transactions. Are you sure you're not some long-lost nephew of his?
Definitely not related to Ian.
So I'd like to start off by saying, like, how long have you been on EPP?
Just over a year.
So a year ago. And before you started, had you done any property investing before then?
I suppose I'd literally got done what everybody usually does and goes to some networking events and reads some books and just sort of starts to try and make their way. But you don't have the same level of focused action. And because you're maybe doing it on your own, you often lack the structure. And when things don't maybe always go your way, which they very often don't in property investing, it can be disheartening. So yeah, I had tried doing it on my own for sure.
And how many deals had you done on your own? Is it a round number?
Well, I had three failed deals.
Right, okay.
So I wasn't exactly filled with great statistics, shall we say.
So you'd not actually completed on a deal, is that right?
Not actually completed on a deal. I was actually getting close to completing on one. And obviously the opportunity to work with EPP and Ian Jackson, who's based over here, came up. And I sort of had to make the decision, do I want to keep doing this on my own or do I actually want to make this a proper business? So I took the leap of faith and here we are.
So you've been on EPP for a year. Just before we delve into how many deals you've done in total, as well as this amazing week with three deals, can we just talk a little bit about your background? So what you do for a job? What's your skill set like? Just so that people can recognize that with no, I don't mean to be rude in any way, but you're not Superman, are you? It's not like you had £1 million in one pocket and, you know, a room full of lawyers in the other pocket and a dad Donald Trump, for example. Like you're a pretty regular guy. So tell the guys what your background was, please, Edward.
Yeah, so certainly there's no massive wealth here. my background was pretty much through school, high school, done my degree in civil engineering. And at that stage, we were well in the grips of the last recession whenever I graduated. So job opportunities were fairly scarce. So I went and done a master's in construction and project management. And again, when I'd completed that, job prospects were still fairly slim. So I ended up working in Canada for nearly a year and a half.
I didn't know that about you. Ah, okay.
Did you not know? I worked in Toronto.
The accent really picked up on you. You sound like a native Canadian now.
Yeah, and then I basically came back and I've had a couple of different civil engineering type jobs since I've been back in Northern Ireland, between sort of water, wastewater, heavy civils. And more recently, I'm working as a project manager with Northern Ireland Railways.
Owned your own house?
Yes, I do indeed, yes.
Brilliant. So how long have you had that for?
I've had my house now 5 years and 1 month.
Awesome, awesome. You're a young man, aren't you, Edward? So excellent. You're bucking the trend, by the way, for your first-time buyer age. It's going up every single year at the moment. So you're contributing to bringing it down, which is awesome. So you clearly had a passion for property. You'd bought your own property 5 years before. You said you'd been doing some education and you tried to do a few deals. What kind of education were you doing? I don't want any name bashing. We're not going to like name names, so just to keep it generic. We don't put anyone down on the podcast, okay?
Yeah, I basically seen, obviously there's lots of different people online offering X, Y, and Z, some of them more reputable than others, which isn't really a secret. There's plenty of information out there. But again, I'd read various books, some of which were better than others. I'd went to some networking events and again got some guidance from different people at some of the events. And that was really it. You know, it was just a case of reading the books, finding out what's there. But obviously there's a bit of a transition moving from something that you've actually read to actually going and physically doing it and then starting to successfully implement it and action it every single time. So, but yeah, that was pretty much it. You know, you can meet an awful lot of people at networking events and you can get a good idea of what's being done. But again, sometimes you find at these events, there's a lot of people with a lot of knowledge, but that have never actually done it themselves.
It's so common, isn't it? Yeah. One of my mentors says, and I'm sure he didn't make it up, but he probably got it from his mentor, but who got it from somewhere else. But he says that... free advice is worth every penny you pay for it. And I just think, yeah, that's absolutely true. And you can watch YouTube video after YouTube video after YouTube video. You can read books. You can go to networking events. And I think to myself, I haven't been to a property networking event for nearly a decade. And you know, when I did go, I used to go like 1, 2, 3 some weeks, was when I didn't have any deals on because I had time to do it. But now I'm doing deals. And since I've been building a property portfolio, I don't go to property networking events anymore because I'm too busy doing deals to actually go to them. And I know there's some good people at them and I go to them to speak to them, to be fair. I have spoken at a few. I went to the Berkshire property meet a few years ago and there were some quality investors there to be fair. But the vast majority of people you meet at networking events want to get into property investing. And so the problem is you're being influenced and you can't fail to be influenced by these people, by people who aren't actually walking the walk on the whole. And that's quite a damaging mindset that you're absorbing then. It's a wannabe mindset and it's difficult. So you met a lot of people with a lot of knowledge, or at least they thought they had a lot of knowledge. And how were you finding the deals? So you said that you'd had 3 failed transactions. How were you finding those and how were you trying to structure them?
Yeah, well, I suppose just to backtrack, you know, I have met some excellent and very inspirational people at the events. So I'm certainly not bashing events by any standard. In terms of deals that I found...
That's right, Edward. I was doing that, mate. I was doing all the bashing, don't worry. To be fair, I used to run a business networking company. So a lot of business can be done at networking events, property and otherwise. I agree. It can be. The problem is people see that as all they need to do. That's what I'm trying to get at. Watching YouTube videos and listening to podcasts and reading books and going to networking, none of those are actually... profit generating activities. Yeah. None of them are actually going to get you a deal. You can be really busy and you can kid yourself that you're, you know, you've got your side hustle going on, as the Americans say. You've got your day job and then you're building your property business in the background, but actually you're not. you're still researching it in all those avenues. So I interrupted you, but thank you for putting me straight, mate.
So I suppose in terms of deals, I just kept a very active eye on the local property market, and I'd seen a property that I thought was a good enough area that would do well enough. I ended up getting a surveyor to go in and look at it. I sort of placed a bid, and the surveyor had sort of said, look, there was potentially just issues with the dump. Maybe the roof wasn't in the best of condition, and relatively small stuff. But when you're starting out and you hear the likes of dump, you know, having a bit of experience now, a lot of people tend to hear the words dump and they're like, wouldn't touch that. But it's usually always relatively easily and cheaply fixed if you know what to look for. But it put me off the property, so I ended up not proceeding. I got outbid anyway, so I didn't think it was worth pursuing.
And you'd found that through an online property portal, had you?
Yeah, it was advertised on one of our local property portals that covers the whole of Northern Ireland.
Yeah, so that was the first deal. What about the other two?
So the next deal I actually had, it came to me from somebody at one of the networking events, and it was a deal that basically they had put a bid in for and just were hoping they would line somebody up for it that was going to their networking events because they believed it to be a good enough property at a good enough price. So the long and short was, it took just over 6 months for this one to fall through because there was actually an issue with the title, and the title issue actually stemmed from whenever the housing executive owned the house and had actually carried out an extension to the kitchen. They'd done it to it and next door's house. So if you imagine, they were semi-detached and it just extended a galley kitchen in each. But part of the kitchen of this property was over the map boundary. So the boundary actually came in like a foot and a half and 4 foot at the end.
So the neighbour could legitimately knock down knock a hole in the wall and come and stand in your kitchen and still be on his own land?
In essence, yes.
You could have like a serving hatch, couldn't you, like between your houses? And oh, it's funny.
So it basically just ended up that the seller, the person selling, didn't want to go through the hassle of getting this rectified, and she then pulled out.
If she's not willing to sort it, is still living there then? Because she's going to struggle to sell that.
Yeah,
you have to be really good friends, don't you, with the neighbour?
she was actually a landlord just looking to get rid of because she lives outside the area. But I think she's literally just rented it again. The house needed some work, but it was at a good enough price. Just frustrating. It wasn't even so much the fact it pulled out, but the fact it took up 6 months.
Yeah, and you, the whole time you're thinking, this is a deal, I've got my first deal going through, spending money on lawyers, etc.
I had everything priced, Frank, kitchen, bathroom, carpets. I had Phoenix arranged to come and install the gas. I had everything on this house.
I'm laughing, Adrian, because I know you so well. It's hilarious. Like, you're a civil engineer. Your attention to detail is going to be through the roof. Those of you that use disc profiling, your C must be like up in the high 90s. And then it falls through. Oh, the spreadsheets you must have had to tear up.
You have no idea, Frank, the pain this caused.
Oh, bless you. In summary, a great deal supplied to you by a great deal sourcer.
Yeah.
What was the fee? What was the proposed fee for that deal?
Well, in fairness, she wasn't actually looking to get a fee out of it. It was more just, here's a property, decent off price. It was more just offering a bit of support and a bit of guidance.
You got value for money out of your lead sourcing deal then, by the sounds of it. You got every penny's worth.
Yeah, but certainly the best of intentions were there, but it obviously just didn't pan out.
But by the way, for those listening, that is not a hard problem to solve at all. All you need to do is redraw the title plan. It would require the neighbours' permission. So you'd need to pay their legals, you'd need to pay the vendor's legals, you'd redraw the plan to have a little kink in it. That now, funnily enough, the depth sorry, the width of a land registry. Do you have land registry in Northern Ireland? You do, don't you?
We do, yes.
Yeah. So the land registry, yeah, because you're in the UK, of course. Land registry, the width of the line, so the biro line on a plan, is about 12 inches on the ground. So it's almost, instead of drawing the line where it is, you'd like have a little slither of like 2 mil of white paper, and then you'd redraw the line on the other side of that, that white slither. So it's barely moving the line. You'd normally pay a little bit of money to the neighbour, so you'd pay £500 or something. And so all in, that problem is only going to cost maybe £2,000 to do. You've got like two sets of lawyers, you've got 500 quid to the neighbor of the vendor, no walls are actually moving or anything, and that would probably only take, if you're in a real hurry, you could probably do that in 2 weeks. If you let the lawyers just crack on with it to themselves, they're probably going to take 3 months. But it's a paper exercise, and so it's easily solvable, but the vendor didn't have the motivation by the sounds of it. They just,
knowing what I know now, it certainly is very doable. And I suppose the key issue I had there was that I obviously wasn't in direct contact with the vendor, and everything was going through an estate agent, which it just obviously adds a layer of, how should we say, misinterpretation.
Yeah, because they can perceive that you're a time waster. The vendor can, because the agent be a time waster, or might be poor at getting back to them, or might give it the big I am but actually under deliver. You just can't control what the vendor's experiencing.
I honestly couldn't put my finger on which one was the weak link, but there was certainly one of them was not overly proactive.
Yeah, and it's funny, when as you were saying the story, in my mind, I wasn't going to pull you up in front of an international audience, Edward, but I did think to myself, in fact, guests, regular listeners of the show and guests will attest to the fact that I often coach people in front of the whole audience, but I wasn't going to do so, given that you've only been with EVP a short while, but I did think to myself, that doesn't add up. That doesn't add up. Why would the vendor not want to go through? They're now stuck with the property. I don't care if it's a buy-to-let landlord. They're still stuck with a property that they're never going to be able to sell. It's such an easy problem to solve. Let's get it solved now and get it sold. Get it solved now, get the problem solved and get the property sold. But that makes sense now. Maybe they were motivated. They just got fed up with the agent, and the agent might have been blaming stuff on you. And
Exactly. And when you're not in direct communication with the vendor, you don't have any control over that. So you don't actually know what the situation is.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. So that was the very interesting second one that still wasted you a ton of time and a few hundred pounds in legals, I imagine. More valuably or more costly to you would have been the time. What about the third one, mate?
So third one, again, came from me obviously having an area that I was interested in investing in. And again, it was an area that was very popular with some other aspiring property investors. And I'd basically seen an agent had a sign up at it, but it wasn't actually listed online. So it's an agent that I actually know that I was introduced to from Ian. So I'd actually contacted the agent and he'd said, yeah, look, they'd be doing viewings soon. So long and short, there was a lot of interest in the property, but my bid was accepted and everything was starting to go through well enough. And then I sort of hit the stumbling block in that I'd went to the 1 day seminar that yourself and Ian Jackson were running. And then obviously had the choice to make. Did I want to come on board and try my hand with EPP, or did I want to sort of continue down the route of paddling my own canoe?
Mm. And you came on board. Excellent. I remember that first episode, that first seminar well in Northern Ireland. The first time I've ever been to Northern Ireland, actually. Excellent, excellent. So did that deal complete?
It didn't, and the reason for that was I actually had to pull out of it because I'd had a conversation obviously with Ian, and he'd obviously just advised, look, you're going to tie all your money up on this deal, you're going to wait at least 6 months before you can refinance to get any of it out. We're going to teach you more sophisticated strategies here, and basically show you how you can actually make your money go further.
Excellent.
So it was a real leap of faith.
You've been working all this time to get one deal. You finally got one that you can get over the line, and your brand new mentor says, throw it away, mate. Don't do it.
Yeah. And as you've already said, me being a very high C on the disc profile, it just goes against everything in my mind that is saying, this is not right.
It's literally, one in the hand is worth two in the bush. It's like, no, throw that one in the hand away. Go have a look in the bush, yeah. But I can't see any birds in the bush. Just go have a look. It's all right. Throw that one away. Which is funny because Ian is like really high D, really fast paced, really low attention to detail, isn't he? So he's like the polar opposite of your approach to investing.
Yeah.
I bet that goes really well for you taking advice from him. But you did. You took advice. So you knocked it on the head. What month was that? What month did you come on board with EPP?
I think it was the very end of October.
And we're in mid-December now, so we're recording this mid-December. So that was October, November. So 14 months in total. And how many deals have you completed on? So you pulled out of that one. How many properties have you completed on in 14 months?
So since I joined EPP, obviously I was sort of one of the first people to get going in Northern Ireland. So
you're a trailblazer, Edward, weren't you?
I was breaking a lot of ice, shall we say, at the start. And there obviously wasn't a lot happening up until Christmas. So it was only really from the January I got going. And since then, putting the number on completions, it's hard to say. I've fully completed on 7. I have another property which is agreed and I have a contract on, but it has an issue with title in that the deeds are lost. So they're actually being reproduced at the minute. And once that happens, then that will complete. The property's already paid for, so I hope it completes.
Yeah.
And then
you own it. You just, no one knows you own it. It's not on land registry yet, is that it?
Exactly. And then I have another one, which is going to complete in the new year. So that'll be number 9.
Wow. 9 completions lined up. I know 2 have got to go through in what you're saying is 12 months of activity. That's remarkable, Edward. Cool. Are you glad you knocked the other one on the head now? The previous one that was going to tie up all your money?
I am, yes. I'd be slightly more happy. It's not always all rosy, as you know yourself. And I actually had 2 fall out of bed. So that could have been 11.
That's funny, Edward. You're disappointed with 9 in 12 months. I know. That's so rubbish. Yeah. Tell you what, have a word with Ian and complain. By the way, how long were you trying to buy your first buy-to-let for? Like, how long had you been researching? And like, when did you first have the idea and start doing something about it?
I would say it was probably caught up to 1.5 years.
So let's just compare just for a moment. Let's just put your massive dissatisfaction with EPP and Ian Jackson in perspective just for a moment, not to mock you in any way. You spent 18 months getting 3 leads, none of which you went ahead with, and you've spent 14 months, only 12 of which you took action in, and you've done 7 completions, 2 more going through, so 9 to come out of that activity, and you're disappointed. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm sorry. We should knock this on the head, this podcast, mate. We've let you down. Do you want your money back?
I do. It's such a disappointment, Frank.
That's part of the game, isn't it? Losing those 2, in all seriousness, losing those 2, you were on for 11. I was doing planning today with some of the guys. We did like a 4-hour group planning session. They were planning Q1 of next year, 2021. And someone said, I want to have 5 deals signed up by the end of the quarter. And I said, that's doable with your energy levels, the amount of time, the amount of money you want to put into this. That's doable. This was an investor in who's going to invest in Manchester. And I said, so how many are actually going to complete? And they were like, 5. And I said, really? 100% of the deals you sign up are going to complete? Yeah. I think they've done three so far. And I said, not all mine complete. And they looked a bit blank. And I said, I reckon probably one in six, one in five. I didn't have the exact figure to hand. Fall through, you know. So if I sign up six, one falls through, either because it gets massively downvalued, or the vendor has a change of heart, or there's some other influence that means that the deal doesn't proceed. And I said I'd feel more comfortable saying that you sign five and four complete. I think that's more realistic. And that comes from experience, Edward, doesn't it? Knowing. So next year, hopefully you'll sign up 11 deals. You won't be expecting all 11 to complete. They could do. Statistically, they could do. It wouldn't be massively unreasonable for them all to, but most likely one or two will fall through, which would be one in six, one in five. Yeah. So I get your disappointment.
As bitter as it was to swallow at the time, I did actually manage to learn an awful lot from both of the failures, which
good.
Is pretty much what you have to take away from it. You know, absolutely. There's no point just throwing the toys in the pram and having a good gurn, as much as I probably did have a good gurn to Ian at the time.
You have to translate that, mate. For those of us that speak English, what's a good gurn?
Just a good yap, a good moan.
It makes me laugh, the differences in our cultures and our languages, the way we speak, rather. So I have a couple of questions for you, mate, if I may. The first is a bit, I will come on to those failures. I'm not going to skim over them. I'd like to hear what you learned. But I have a challenge for you. You didn't know this, Edward, but I have a little conundrum for you. So get your thinking cap on, mate. And this is for those of you listening at home as well. Hypothetical situation. Fred buys a house. An investment property that he wants to flip on, and he does some work to it and makes it a lot more valuable, and he's about to sell it on, right? And he's chatting to Joe, who's lives next door, and they've, you know, standard detached house, and there's a garden. They both have a back garden. They both have a bit of a side garden. So there's just a fence that runs down between their two properties. And Fred has wound Joe up a little bit during the refurbishment. There's a bit of noise, and one of the contractors parked on Joe's land on his driveway one day and not realizing, and Joe got really upset, and Fred's out back, you know, mowing the lawn, getting it all ready for sale. And Joe comes out and says, "Fred, can I have a word?" Yeah, Joe, what's up? And Joe says, I'm really upset, Fred. Like, you've really annoyed me on this. I thought you're going to move in and make it nice and live in it. And instead you're now going to rent it to tenants. And even worse, you're going to sell it to another investor. I could end up living next to anyone. Contractors made loads of noise. You parked on my drive. That wasn't me, Fred. I know, but your contractors parked on my drive. So I'm really upset. And just so happens, I know a little bit about property law. I'm going to contest this boundary. And so I am telling you right now, and I'm going to put this in writing, that I believe the boundary should be a meter closer to your house. So this whole fence is in the wrong place. It's right on the boundary line, by the way, Ed. It's, you know, if you measure it as per land registry, it's bang on the boundary line. I think it should be a meter closer to your house. I think my garden should be a meter wider and your garden should be a meter narrower. And here's the letter. There you go. There's the letter. It's in writing. Good luck selling it now, Fred, because now you've got to disclose this dispute with your neighbour to every potential buyer. No one's going to buy it from you. And I know I'm going to have a lovely, peaceful summer because you don't want to tenant it yet. You want to sell it and you can't now sell it. Ha, ha, ha. And he walks off all smug into his house. So, Ed, you are Fred. And listeners, you are Fred. Hopefully none of you are Joe, hopefully. What do you do? How do you solve this problem? You need to sell this. You need your profit. What do you do? Over to you, Ed. Not to put you on the spot, mate. You're 1 year in. You should be an expert now. It should be easy.
Oh, dear. I could crack some joke about the Northern Ireland answer to that solution, Frank, but we'll not go there.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, dear. Well, I suppose the key part of it is there's obviously a relationship breakdown there. So in the interest of avoiding the legals, etc., probably try and actually go and see if you can repair the relationship.
So Fred tried that. He said, Joe, surely we can sort this out. Let's chat, have a chat face to face. Joe says, we are face to face, Fred. You can do one. I'm not interested in resolving this. So yeah, that happened. I missed that bit out, Edward.
Okay.
much to your disappointment, because that was your solution, wasn't it? You're such a nice bloke. You would have taken chocolates round, wouldn't you, and some flowers to say sorry. But yeah, he melted the chocolates and threw the flowers out the window. So yeah, sorry about that.
Well, certainly if the property's going to make money, and the property next door has potential to make money, one of the solutions could be to offer to buy the house next door as well.
Offer to buy Joe's? Yeah, it's worth 100 grand, and he said you can have it for 200.
That's nice of him.
I know, I'm helping you here a lot, Edward. I'm helping you, I know. You'll thank me at the end. You'll have learned how to solve this.
Oh, dear. So let me see. If he's got the pound, right? Like, obviously, the minute you go down the legal route, it's going to cost you time and money. But surely he really has no cause for actually... He's talking about a dispute, but if he's owned the house for ages and he's never raised it before now, then he really has no recourse, does he? Because if it's been...
Yeah, if it was 12 years, then the land, the new boundary, if the boundary had moved, the new boundary would be valid if land registry came out and it was a completely enclosed area and Fred could prove that the meter that was under contention, the contentious meter, he'd been maintaining for 12 years, that would work. Unfortunately, Fred's only owned it a year or so, so he can't prove that it's been there for 12 years.
Could he ask the person he bought the house off?
Yeah, he could, but they can't be traced.
Oh, dear.
I've never done this before. I've never posed a problem. I'm going to start doing it each episode, I think. It's good. It's getting you thinking.
You're going to give me a clue, are you?
I'm not, no. I'm going to solve it for you. I'm not going to leave it as a cliffhanger. And next year, we're going to speak to Edward and give him the answer. No, I'll solve it on this episode. Hopefully, you guys at home are trying to work out the solution. So there's a few solutions. Are you stumped, mate?
I think I'm just not seeing it, but I knew rightly it would be something explicitly obvious, which is going to annoy me, something shocking.
There's a few solutions. There's one that I love, one solution I absolutely love. So the obvious one is just offer Joe some money. Go, look, okay, I can see you. Let me buy, in inverted commas, that meter of land. If I give you £1,000, does that make up for your distress? And are you happy to withdraw your claim and agree that the boundary's there? And maybe he takes that. And maybe it's worth a grand to you. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's £500, whatever. I think that would gall a lot of people because, you know, Joe's just got one over on Fred. So that's one solution for sure. The other is you don't sell it and you rent it out because the tenant doesn't care. You know, Joe's not actually planning on moving the fence in any way. That's a solution. You could go down the legal route and try and argue over it. But I think someone's worked it out. The cost per square meter of doing that, the purchase cost, you know, if you count all your legal fees, is ridiculous. It's like hundreds and hundreds of pounds per square meter, which is ridiculous. You could go down that route. Do you know the best solution? This happened to a mentor of mine. The best solution, you just title split. So what you do is you go to land registry and you say, look, I want to split my title of this property. I want it to be 1.5 meters from this boundary strip of land. And then the house and the rest of the garden is on a separate title. And you sell that title to the next person. And you retain the strip of land. And do you know what I love about this? Joe now can't sell his house because he's got a boundary dispute.
He has a boundary dispute.
I just, when my mentor explained that to me, I was like, oh, I love it. That's such a good solution. And then you're talking to Joe about, hey, Joe, do you want to buy this strip of land? You know that 200 grand house? Guess what? I've got a bit of land next to it. It's really expensive. Or you could gift it to the other person. So yeah, isn't that an elegant way? Because Joe can't have a boundary dispute with the other piece of land because there's a strip in between now. So yeah, there's the answer to your conundrum, mate. There's probably, if anyone's got another solution or an alternative solution, then feel free to write in, guys. I've just been joined by my son, Frankie Flegg. How are you, sir? This is our podcast. You okay? Excellent, excellent. Can I come play with you after I finish my podcast? Is that okay?
Yeah, I need you to do some PowerPoint.
Oh, I can help you with PowerPoint.
Could you just...
Mr. Edward Jackson, I'm sorry about this. We have a PowerPoint crisis in our house, apparently.
That's no problem.
Please, can you just tell me how to get a video onto the PowerPoint?
Oh, I can, I can. It's not something I can describe to you. I can show you how to do it in a bit. I'll be about half an hour, mate, okay? Do you mind closing the studio door? Thank you so much. Sorry about that, Mr. Jackson, and sorry about that, listeners. PowerPoint emergency. How do you embed a video into a PowerPoint? I will have to play with that. You'd be better at that than me, Edward, wouldn't you?
Absolutely no chance.
Oh, no chance. Oh, I thought you were a bit of a tech whiz. I had it wrong. So I would like to... talk about these seven properties that you've acquired, just to give the listeners some kind of an idea of what you've been buying in Northern Ireland, the difference it's made to your net worth, the difference it's made to your income. And I'd also like to touch on the two that have fallen through, why they've fallen through. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, that's no problem.
Fab. So let's start with the failures first, get them out of the way. What went wrong with the two deals? What was the reason for them falling through?
Okay, so I had one that I had agreed to buy off a lady, and as the time went on, it nearly seemed that her behaviour was getting somewhat erratic, and we just weren't fully convinced that she was in the right place to be selling her property, and we ended up just deciding to pull out of it. She, again, was going back and forth, and we're going to sell it or we're not going to sell it. We are going to sell it. And I just thought, you know what? There's just an awful lot of risk here. And I just got to the stage, I didn't feel comfortable with it at all.
It's a tricky one, that. I've had it a few times, actually. When you say risk, what was the risk? That were you going to do like a key undertaking? Were you doing works while she owned the property or something?
No, I think it was more just her state of mind. She was obviously under an awful lot of pressure, but the last thing I wanted is obviously somebody coming back at me.
Yeah, you buy the house, you do it up, you put tenants in, and then a family member or her herself comes back and says, I didn't want to sell it. Then you're in a bit of an awkward situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know yourself, the deal has to work for both sides.
Absolutely.
If there's any doubt at all, like, just walk away. There's plenty more of them.
It's very wise, very wise. Your solicitors should be... checking that they should be, so the solicitors that are representing the vendor should be checking their state of mind, should be alert to any indications that they're either being coerced or that they're not of sound mind. But we've had one recently, actually, from one of our guys in Yorkshire, and it got to the point where the solicitor said, I'm not convinced this person knows what they're doing. They were like not remembering conversations that they'd had with the solicitor and stuff like that. And obviously we know our vendors really well. We've sat down with them, we've explained it to them. And so we ended up asking this person, they disclosed, we didn't know this, but they disclosed to the solicitor that they had been receiving psychiatric support. And so what we agreed with the solicitor was for them to take a psychiatric examination, and for the psychiatrist who'd been regularly treating them to write a report for the solicitor to give their opinion on whether they were whether they had the ability to make this decision on their own. And funnily enough, the psychiatrist was wholeheartedly in support of the fact that this person knew what they were doing. They knew that they were selling below market value and that they were comfortable with their patient selling their property. But that's not a call we can make, and I don't think it's a call the solicitors can make. So I think you're very wise to...
The scenario was very similar to what you're describing, Frank, in that the lady just wasn't remembering discussions. Yeah. And I think when it came down to it, she had a discussion with one of the solicitors, and whatever she had said, the solicitor just says, look, I think you need to really consider just walking away from this one.
And when the lawyer's saying that, then you need to listen, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was one of the failures, and I can see why he walked away. And I think many would have perhaps pushed it through, but I have to admit that wouldn't have sat comfortably with my values or EPP's values. So what about the second one?
So the second one was a great property, good enough condition, and basically I used a mortgage lender to secure, to try and get a mortgage on the property. And this particular lender, I will not mention him, but anybody based in Northern Ireland will 100% know who I am talking about when I say it would be easier to get blood out of a stone.
You're describing about half the lenders in England at the moment. The difficulty that we're having, that all franchisees at the moment are having in getting mortgages, is unbelievable, given that we're in a mini boom, apparently. You know, property prices are going up. So why are all the valuers downvaluing, and why are the lenders acting as though it's their last £5 that they're lending? But this is earlier on in the year, so it would have been it should have been easier to get lending. So what happened? Was it that you just couldn't get a mortgage? Is that what happened?
So basically the lender was just particularly slow. A lot of the people listening in the UK maybe aren't aware, but Northern Ireland has a far smaller lending panel. We currently only have 7 buy-to-let lenders.
Hang on, Edward. You're downplaying the reach of the EPP podcast. You're unaware that we have an international audience. We actually did the stats this week. One of our largest audiences is in Australia, followed by the US. Italy is our third largest audience, actually, behind those, fourth largest behind those two in the UK. So India has got quite a few listeners as well. I was surprised, but, yeah, so for those of you who aren't aware of Northern Ireland, we should have started off with this. Where is Northern Ireland? What is Northern Ireland? It's a small part of an island that's smaller than Britain, but a part of the UK. Is that it in a nutshell? I think that's it.
Pretty much, yeah.
They get wetter weather than Wales. That's what I always think to myself. So 7 lenders, and this one was just really slow, was it?
Yeah, it basically every time. From the appointment of the surveyor, took over 2 weeks. The surveyor went out. He took nearly 2 weeks to submit his report. And then each time they wanted something, they would ask for one thing. I would go and get it done and submit, and then they would take 2 to 3 weeks to come back to me. So first time it was, oh, we need a dump and timber report. So me very quickly had one done in a couple of days, submitted. Then again, nothing for 2 to 3 weeks. I think the longest I waited was 22 days for a response.
Unbelievable. How can you take 3 weeks to respond?
They come back and asked for an electrical cert. So again, I went and got a Nikiak contractor to carry out a certification. That was fine. And again, no response for 2 to 3 weeks. Then they said, we're going to need you to actually get the dump and timber treated. Again, part of this was going and speaking to a contractor, getting the quotation for the work, and then going back to them and saying, right, this is the quotation I've got. He's agreed to undertake it, etc. Again, nothing, 2 to 3 weeks. Then they wanted some electrical work carried out on the house. And by which stage, we were 4 months down the line, and the vendor just had enough. It knocked the wind out of my sails because there was nothing you could do to speed it up. And now that I know what they're like, I just purposely don't use them. In comparison, there's another lender that I've used a few times, and the quickest turnaround I've had is 11 calendar days from decision in principle, surveyor appointed, survey and offer.
11 days. That's unbelievable. That is. God, that's impressive. And that's it. And you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't know who was the rubber. If I went to Northern Ireland now, or if I was a novice investor who'd lived in Northern Ireland all my life, I wouldn't know which was the one that's going to take 4 months and lose me a deal. How much equity was in that deal?
That particular deal, there was nearly, it was 24,000.
Yeah, that's a big chunk of money. And what was the value of the property?
Value of property was, what was it? It was just over 100,000.
So roughly 20%, 24%, something like that of below market value. And you've just walked away from that, or they've lost you that. We have a bit of a joke on the partnership to those listening, that some of the lenders, I swear they run out of money. I swear they get to a certain point in the month and go, right, we've just got to, they won't say, you know, we don't want to lend, or we haven't got any more money this month. They just go, right, everyone, close your doors and ask loads of questions. Don't matter what you ask, just ask them, and only ask one at a time. So, because that'll string it out till next month when we've got some money. It just goes on and on. Oh, crazy. I had, I won't name the lender, but we have a channel on the Slack online platform that we use for the whole partnership to chit chat. And one of the channels is who's lending at the moment, who's quick, you know, so you'd put the name of the really quick lender on there, and who's not, who's really slow, and you put the name of the really slow one on there. And there are two lenders in England at the moment that are just ridiculously slow. I don't know if they've run out of money. I don't know if they're trying to slow down like the loans they're taking on because they're worried about next year. I just don't know what the reason, who knows, you know, they might have had a change of management. They might have too many people on furlough. They might have had a load of people take mortgage holidays. It's impossible for us to work out why. But what we can do is observe the market really closely because we're doing so many mortgages at a time. And it's funny, one of the guys phoned me this morning, one of the EPP partners, and said, Frank, I'm getting problems with this property. It's a remortgage. I've owned it over a year. It should be easy to refinance. And my first question was, who's the lender? And they named one of these two lenders. And I said, oh, there's your problem. I said, keep answering their questions, but at the same time, start with someone else. Start with a different broker, different mortgage lender, and don't go with either of these two because they're just not lending at the moment. We've got like eight partners with deals that are just seem to be stalling because these two lenders. And he said, really? Wow. Oh, crack straight on with someone else. And then the likelihood is the other one will go through quicker. And it's that inside knowledge, isn't it, of knowing who's lending and who's not, who's fast, who's awkward, that's so valuable. Yeah, it's cost you a deal.
It is. There's a lot to be said for having such a large team, especially across the UK. I know certainly our last training day, it was good to see what Matt and Dave were up to.
They've been on the podcast. Some of the guys will know Matt and Dave. Yeah, absolutely. So they did a little bit of a presentation to everyone about how they're finding their deals and how they're structuring them. Yeah, absolutely. So these seven, let's just do some top level stats, mate. How much equity have you generated across the seven that you've completed on so far?
Equity, do you know? It's about 185,000.
185. And how many in the two that are going through?
Let me see on that one. Give me 2 seconds till I get the calculator. Yeah.
Is that because you know your percentage discounts, but not your your pounds? Yeah.
Yeah, on that one that's going through, it's 24,950 is the equity.
On one of them, but you've got two going through, you said.
Well, the other one is it's the one that has lost the title deeds. Now, it's pretty exceptional. I'd probably be embarrassed to say how much is in it.
What's it worth and what are you buying it at?
So it's basically a three-bed terrace in just sort of on the boundary of sort of South Belfast. It needs at least £30,000-£35,000 worth of work. But as it sits, there's no deeds. So in essence, the house is worth very little.
But once the deeds are sorted and once you've done the work, what's it worth?
Well, once the work's done, it'll be worth 100,000 all day long, very easily.
So 100k val when you've done the works. What are you buying it for?
Slightly uncomfortable, but 8,000.
£8,000. Wow. I'm impressed. That will be the best. I don't know if you know, Matt and Dave completed on their deal 2 days ago, and that was a £120,000 flat that they purchased for 40, independently valued by Rick's at 120, and they bought it. They completed 2 days ago. It might have been 3 days ago now at £40,000. So that was a 66% discount. Yours... oh, it's not a record, Edward. I'm working out the math. So you can't count the you can't, it's not a 92% discount because you need the works. So it's 35 plus 8, which is £43,000. So it's 57% discount. It's not the biggest discount, but it's still amazing. So good on you, mate. So let me just work that out. So that was 50, what did I say it was? 57% discount, 57%, and that's 57K. I'm just working this out, 57K plus 24. So that's 209 plus 57 is £266,000, £250,000 quid, mate, in equity over the year. It's phenomenal. What cash flow from those nine? What will you be bringing in net each month?
Cash flow. So all of my properties, I use basically an agent to manage them because, yeah, again, it's just more cost time effective. And after all the costs, it's coming in, it's about £2,100.
£2,000 a month. Brilliant.
That's with the 7 completed so far.
Oh, okay. So that'll go up by another, what, how much are the other two, mate?
The one that's completing, it's going to cash flow quite well because it's currently rented. So part of the condition was that I had to buy it with the tenant. And that was, again, part of how I got such a good price on it. So it's actually got a cash flow just over £300 a month.
Wow. And then you've got the other one, the one with £24,000. So you're above £2,500 a month then, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, it'll probably be sitting towards 27.
You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but how's that compared to your monthly salary?
It's more.
So you've made your monthly salary in passive income in 14 months on the partnership. That's just a lot. Well, it's life-changing, isn't it? Yeah. And hang on a second. Did we not have a discussion about half an hour ago about your disappointment with your first year on the partnership? I know you were Jeff and Jack. So I want to finish off just by asking, what's been the biggest thing for you? What on, like, you know, that's night and day, isn't it? 3 deals in 18 months, none of them completed, and now you've got 9 deals in the next 18 months. Well, what are we at, 14 months so far? £250,000 equity, £2,700 a month cash flow, more, you've replaced your salary, so you could quit your job and you'd be better off and you could just be sat at home now. Knowing you, that's the last thing on your mind. You'll probably continue the job, probably continue to build. And that's the thing. You could do that for another, if you do 9 deals and then you carry on at that rate, in your 5 years, you're at, what's that, 45 properties, 40 properties. That's phenomenal. That's you set up for the rest of your life, which is amazing. What has it been, mate? What's the biggest difference? Like, obviously the results are transformed. That's what comes out of the sausage machine. Those results are the output of the action that you've taken. What's the input been? What difference has EPP made to what you've been doing? How has it been possible?
Yeah, well, I suppose the key difference that I've certainly noticed from the likes of, obviously, EPP compared to maybe some of the other providers is we're very much taught how to actually build a business and grow it as a business, in comparison to just going out to find deals and sort of hope for the best. It's very much commercialized in that you're taught how to make a business, you're taught how to make it work, and again, how to find solutions where many others can't.
It's one of our sayings, isn't it? No opportunity to help a vendor comes across our desk without us providing a solution. And I think you are living proof of that, Edward. Thank you so much, mate, for your time today. I am so pleased for you. I'm looking forward to continuing to work via Ian Jackson with you over the next 4 and a bit years. So, mate, thanks ever so much. Congratulations.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers, Edward. God bless.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.